empathy there. No glint of humanity. And braced himself for a struggle. "Her soul," he said, and his voice had never been rougher. So raw it was practically bloody. He didn't know how it worked or what it would mean. He only knew that some part of Sarai might yet be saved, and must be. "You have to catch it." Someone else, almost anyone else, might have seen his heartbreak and forgiven his tone of command. But not Minya. She'd had every intention of catching Sarai's soul. That was what she'd been listening for. From the moment she learned Sarai had fallen, she had stretched her senses to the limits, waiting, hardly breathing, alert to the telltale skim of passing ghosts. That was what it was like, straining to hear, but with her whole being. And like with listening, the subtle skim of a soul could be drowned out by a nearer, louder presence. Like an arrogant, trespassing man astride a winged metal beast. This stranger dared to come here and break her focus in order to command her to do what she was doing already. As though, if not for him, she would let Sarai drift away.
"Who do you think you are?"
she seethed through clenched teeth. Who did Laszlo think he was? Orphan, Godsborn, librarian, hero. Maybe he was all of those things. But the only answer that came to him, and the only relevant context, was Sarai. What she was to him, and he to her.
I'm Sarai's,
he began, but couldn't finish. There wasn't a word for what they were. Neither married nor promised. What time had there been for promises? Not yet lovers, but so much more than friends. So he faltered in his answer, leaving it unfinished, and it was, in its way, simply and perfectly true. He was Sarai's.
"Sarai's what?"
demanded Minya, her fury mounting.
"Her protector against me."
It enraged her, the way he held her body, as though Sarai belonged to him. As if she could be more precious to him than to her own family.
"Leave her and go,"
she snarled.
"If you want to live."
Live? Laszlo felt a laugh rise up in his throat. His new power surged in him. It felt like a storm ready to burst through his skin.
"I'm not going anywhere,"
he said. His fury matching hers. And to Minya, it was a challenge to her family and her home. Everything she'd spent herself on and poured herself into, every moment of every day, since God's blood spurted and she saved who she could carry. But saving them had only been the beginning. She'd had to keep them alive. 4 babies in her care. Inside a crime scene of corpses and ghosts, and herself just a traumatized child. Her mind was formed in the desperate, keep-alive pattern of those early weeks and months, as she spent herself out and burned herself up. She didn't know any other way. There was nothing left over. Nothing. Not even enough to grow. Through sheer, savage will, Minya poured even her life force into the colossal expenditure of magic necessary to hold on to her ghosts and keep her charges safe. And not just safe, but loved. In Great Ellen, she had given them a mother as best she could. And in the effort of it all, she had stunted herself, blighted herself, whittled herself to a bone of a thing. She wasn't a child. She was barely a person. She was a purpose. And she hadn't done it all and given everything just to lose control now. Power flared from her. Ruby, Feral, and Sparrow cried out, as the dozen ghosts who remained in the garden, great Ellen among them, unfurled and flew at Laszlo with their knives and meat hooks, and great Ellen with her bare hands shaping themselves into claws as her teeth grew into fangs to shame even Scathus's Rasselas. Laszlo didn't even think. From the towering wall of metal that was backdrop to the garden, and made up the seraph's shoulders and the column of its neck, a great wave of liquid metal peeled itself away and came pouring down, flashing with the first rays of the rising sun, to freeze into a barrier between himself and the chief onslaught. At the same moment, Rasselas leapt. The creature didn't bother itself with ghosts, but knocked Minya to the ground like a toy to a kitten, and pinned her there, one metal hoof pressing on her chest. It was so swift, a blur of metal, and she was down. The breath was knocked out of her, and the fury was knocked out of Laszlo. Whatever she was, this cruel little girl, his own would-be murderer, not least, the sight of her sprawled out like that at Rasselas's mercy shamed him. Her legs were so impossibly thin, her clothes as tattered as the beggars in the grin. She didn't give up. Still her ghosts came at him, but the metal moved with them, flowing to block them, catching their weapons and freezing around them. They couldn't get near. He went and knelt by Minya. She struggled, and Rasselas increased the pressure of its elegant hoof against her chest. Just enough to hold her, not enough to hurt. Her eyes burned black. She hated the pity she saw in Laszlo's. It was 1,000 times worse than the fury had been. She gritted her teeth, ceased her ghost's attack, and spat out,
"Do you want me to save her or not?"
He did. Rasselas lifted its hoof, and Minya slid out from beneath it, rubbing the place on her chest where it had pinned her. How she hated Laszlo then. In compelling her by force to do what she'd been planning anyway, it felt as though he'd won something, and she'd lost. Lost what? Control. The queen was vulnerable on the Quellboard with no pawns to protect her. This new adversary possessed the gift she'd always craved, and up against it, she was nothing. His power swept hers aside like a hand brushing crumbs from a table. His control of Mazathium gave them their freedom in every way they'd ever daydreamed. But Minya didn't even know if she would be counted among them, or would be swept aside, just like her power and her ghosts. They could leave her behind if they wanted, if they decided they didn't trust her, or simply didn't like her. And what could she do? And what of the humans and the Godslayer and revenge? It seemed to her the citadel swayed beneath her, but it was steady. It was her world that swayed, and only she could feel it. She rose to her feet, her pulse beat in her temples. She closed her eyes. Laszlo watched her. He felt an ache of tenderness for her, though he couldn't have said why. Maybe it was simply because, with her eyes closed, she really looked like a 6-year-old child. And it brought home that once upon a time she had been. Just a 6-year-old child with a crushing burden. When she settled into a stillness of deep concentration, he let himself hope what he had so far only wondered. That it might be possible Sarai was not lost to him. That she was, even now, adrift, like an Ulola flower borne by the wind. Where was she? The very air felt alive with possibility, charged with souls and magic. There was a man who loved the moon, but whenever he tried to embrace her, she broke into 1,000 pieces and left him drenched with empty arms. Sathas had finally learned that if he climbed into the pool and kept very still, the moon would come to him and let him be near her. Only near, never touching. He couldn't touch her without shattering her. And so, as Laszlo had told Sarai, He had made peace with the impossible. He took what he could get. Laszlo had loved Sarai as a dream, and he would love her as a ghost as well. He finally acknowledged that what he carried in his arms was not Sarai, but only a husk, empty now of the mind and soul that had touched his in their dreaming. Carefully, he laid her down in the flowers of the garden. They cushioned her like a bower. Her lifeless eyes were open. He wished to close them, but his hands were sticky with her blood, and her face, it was unmarred, even serene. So he leaned in close and used his lips. The lightest touch, catching her honey-red lashes with his lower lip and brushing down, finishing with a kiss to each smooth lid, and then to each cheek, and finally her lips. Light as the brush of a moth wing, across the sweet ripe fruit with its crease in the middle, as soft as apricot down. Finally, the corners, sharp as crescents, where her smile had lived. The others watched, with breaking hearts or hardened ones, and when he stood and stepped back and turned to Minya, he felt like Sathar's in the pool, waiting for the moon. He didn't know how it worked. He didn't know what to look for. Really, it wasn't so different from waiting for her in a dream, when she might appear anywhere, and his whole being clenched into a knot of eagerness. He watched Minya's face, alert to any change in her expression. But there was none. Her little grubby visage was masked still, until the moment her eyes sprang open. There was a light in them. Triumph, Laszlo thought, and his heart gave a leap of joy, because he thought it meant that she'd found Sarai and bound her. And she had. Like an etching in the air that slowly filled with beauty, Sarai was gathered out of nothingness and bound back into being. She was wearing her pink slip, and it bore no blooms of blood. The smooth blue of her chest was unpierced by the iron finial, and her hair was still studded with flowers. For Sarai, the sensation of re-raveling was like being saved from drowning, and her first breaths drawn with phantom lungs, which were, like everything about her new state, illusion, but illusion given form, were the sweetest she had ever known. She was not alive, and she knew it. But whatever her new state might lack, it was infinitely preferable to the unmaking that had almost devoured her. She laughed. The sound met the air like a real voice, and her body had mass like a real body, though she knew it followed a looser set of rules. And all the pity and outrage she'd felt on behalf of Minya's bound ghosts deserted her. How could she ever have thought Evanescence was kinder? Minya had saved her, and Sarai's soul flowed toward her like music. That was what it felt like to move, like music come to life. She threw her arms around Minya.
"Thank you,"
she whispered, fierce, and let her go. Minya's arms had not responded, and neither had her voice. Sarai might have seen the cool flicker of her gaze if she weren't so swept up in the moment. None of her old fears could compare with the wrenching loss she had just escaped. And there was Laszlo. She stilled. Her ghost hearts beat like real ones, and her cheeks flushed. All the habits of her living body taking root in her phantom one. Laszlo. There was blood on his chest and witchlight in his eyes. He was blue and ablaze with power, and with love. And Sarai flew to him. Tears streamed down his cheeks. She kissed them away.
"I'm dead," she thought.
But she couldn't feel that it was true any more than she'd felt the dreams she shared with Laszlo were false. For him it was the same. She felt, in his arms, the way she had in his mind. Exquisite. And all he knew was gladness and second chances and the magic of possibility. He knew the touch of her dream lips, and he had even kissed her dead face in soft farewell. He bent now and kissed her ghost, and found her mouth full and sweet and smiling. He felt her smile. He tasted it, and he saw her joy. Her cheeks were flushed, and her eyes were shining. He bent his head to kiss her shoulder, moving the pink strap aside a fraction with his lips, and he was breathing in her scent, rosemary and nectar, when she whispered in his ear. The brush of her lips sent shivers coursing through him, and the words, they sent chills. He froze. The lips were hers, but the words were not.
"We're going to play a game," she said,
and her voice was all wrong. It was bell bright and as sweet as icing sugar.
"I'm good at games, you'll see. Here's how this one goes."
He looked up from Sarai's shoulder. He locked eyes with Minya, and the light of triumph in hers had all new meaning. She smiled, and Sarai's lips whispered her words in Laszlo's ear.
"There's only one rule. You do everything I say, or I'll let her soul go. How does that sound?"
Laszlo drew back sharply and looked at Sarai. The smile he had tasted was gone from her lips, and the joy from her eyes. There was only horror now, as their new truth came clear to them both. Sarai had sworn to herself that she would never again serve Minya's twisted will. And now she was powerless against it. She was dead, and she was saved, and she was caught, and she was powerless.
"No."
She wanted to scream it.
"No."
But her lips formed Minya's words and not her own.
"Not if you understand,"
she whispered to Laszlo. And she hated every syllable, and hated herself for not resisting. But there was no resisting. When her soul had shaken loose from her body, she'd had nothing to hold onto it with. No arms to reach with or hands to grip with. Now she had no will to resist with. Laszlo understood. The little girl held the thread of Sarai's soul, and so she as good as held the thread to his, and to his power, too. What would she do with it? What would she make him do? It was a game, she'd said.
"Not if you understand."
He understood. He held Sarai in his arms. Her ghost, her fate, and Weep's fate too. He stood on the citadel of the Mazarthim, and it was not of this world, and he was not who he had been.
"So you could be anyone,"
Sarai had said once.
"A prince, even."
But Laszlo was not a prince. He was a god. And this was not a game to him. He nodded to Minya, and the space where his legend was gathering up words grew larger. Because this story was not over yet. To be continued. This has been a Hachette Audio production of Strange the Dreamer. Written by Lainey Taylor. Read by Steve West. Produced by Michelle McGonigal. Directed by Christine Pham. Recorded by John Kovarek, Literati Audio Studios. Post-production by Tim McCarthy. Strange the Dreamer is also available in print and digital formats from Little Brown and Company, a division of Hachette Book Group. For more Hachette Audio productions, visit us at hachetteaudio.com. Thank you for listening. Text copyright 2017 by Lainey Taylor. Audio production copyright 2017 Hachette Audio. All rights reserved. Hachette Book Group supports the right to free expression and the value of copyright. The purpose of copyright is to encourage writers and artists to produce the creative works that enrich our culture. The duplicating, uploading, and distribution of this audiobook without permission is a theft of the author's intellectual property. If you would like permission to use material from the audiobook, other than for review purposes, please contact permissions@hbgusa.com. Thank you for your support of the author's rights. This audiobook is a work of fiction. Names, characters, places, and incidents are either the product of the author's imagination or are used fictitiously. And any resemblance to actual persons, living or dead, events or locales, is entirely coincidental.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.